Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you, Tim, and welcome everybody to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Well, today we're venturing out into the land of drama. We'll start off with our first offering. That's Escape and the Red Forest. This is from 1950.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Escape, the battle of man against the elements, of man against man. 30 minutes of flight into the world of action and danger, where every minute is a call to adventure. These are the moments when a life hangs on the twist of a chance. The moments of Escape.
Tonight, we escape to the wildest mountains of Idaho and the story of love and murder in the midst of a raging forest fire, as Anthony Ellis tells it in The Red Forest.
It had taken me 5 years, 3 months, and 4 days. It had carried me across 21 states. And then in the Clearwater country of Idaho, I'd found it. That was in the afternoon. The trail had led from a lumber town along a washboard road and into the forests. I'm no woodsman, but in the daylight I found the place. And then I started back to the car. But something was different. Maybe the late sun red through the trees, maybe tall shadows. There wasn't a trail anymore, only streams where there hadn't been before. Trees that were the same, but weren't. And sounds. Sounds that were fun when you were a kid on a hike, but now scared you. I used my last cigarette 3 or 4 hours before, and it was then that I started to run. Run. And the fear grows until you want to scream and want the ground to open up for you, warm and safe. But it didn't. And now, there was only the dry whirring of a rattlesnake, coiled inches away from me. No! I lived then, maybe because the snake was more afraid of something else than me. It didn't strike, just slithered away and became the pattern of the leaves. It was nearly dark when I found the road. I'd come to it about a half a mile below where I'd parked the car. A half hour later, on the outskirts of a little town, my headlights picked up a girl standing on the side of the road. She carried a cheap paper suitcase, and she was thumbing a ride. I stopped.
Can I get a ride, mister?
Why, sure. Here. I'll put your case in the back. There we go.
Gee, I'm lucky. Not many cars on the road tonight.
Uh-huh. Been walking long?
Uh-huh. I'm on my way to Missoula. My last ride dropped me a mile or so back.
Yeah?
You live around here?
No. No.
I don't guess you'd be going as far as Missoula.
Well, sure.
Gee, that's swell. I got a job there starting tomorrow. Kind of broke, if you know what I mean. Buses cost money.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Mind if I smoke?
No, of course not. Go right ahead.
Hey, your face.
What?
You've been hurt. You're all scratched up.
Oh, well, I was hunting. I got lost just the other side of town. If you want to take a nap, it's okay. We've got about 100 miles to go.
Guess I look pooped, huh?
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. I am. Say you're all right, mister. I'll take you up on it. Some guys, the minute you get in, want more than the bus fare. I can see you're not that kind.
You'll be safe. I'll wake you when we're at the city limits.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Oh. Gee, it's nice out here. It's kind of lonely, but it smells good. I wonder what that is over there.
What?
The sky. Bright like, see?
I don't know.
Gee, could almost be Seattle from a long way off. I had a boyfriend. He used to take me driving at night. When we came back, you could see a glow. Just like that. Oh.
I saw that glow in the sky. It was on our right. And as the road twisted through the trees, it fell behind us, then to our left, and circled until it was straight ahead. The girl had fallen asleep very quickly. I saw her face in the light from the dash. Thin, pretty, peaceful. And it was about 15 minutes after I'd picked her up that I saw the lights on the road. And then closer, the figures waving.
Hey, they're already? I just got to sleep.
No, there's something wrong. There's a cop coming this way. What's the trouble?
Plenty. We want you, mister.
Want me?
Yeah. Forest fire. Bad one. We gotta have every man we can find. Someone else in the car with you?
Yes, a girl.
Good, she can help.
Look, I'd like to very
Here's
much.
The forest ranger. He'll explain.
Well, I'm awfully sorry, but you see, I'm on my way to Missoula.
Not tonight. I got authority to do this, mister. I'm sorry, but we need you.
Well,
You couldn't get much further anyway. The road's cut off. Mountain's going up like a torch. If it's spread, there's three towns going, too. Come on, I got some clothes and boots for you.
Hey, what about me? I gotta get to Missoula. I got a job in the morning.
Sorry, sister, you got a job serving coffee here.
You cops.
$5 a day.
A day?
Or longer, it depends. Come on, let's go.
There was nothing else to do, so I got into the clothes the ranger gave me, then stood around and waited. I wasn't tired anymore, just scared. Scared of going into that forest again. The wind came up a bit, and with it, the smell. Smell of burning. Smell of death. A long way off, but closer than the glow had been, we could see flickering against the sky. And it was in a lot of places. Suddenly, it was too warm and too quiet.
All right, you guys. The telephone's burnt out. I made contact with a short wave set. You, mister.
What?
What's your name?
Pendel.
Pendel?
Yeah.
You ever use one of these?
Walkie-talkie? Well, sure, I was in the signal corps.
Okay, then you'll carry it. Now listen, this is bad, real bad. The fire's got behind us. We can't get any more men through for several hours. They got to come around from the other side, and that's 30 miles.
What's the use, then? Let's get out.
Hey, Crowbar.
Yeah?
I'm putting you in charge. You know what to do. Get in as close as you can to the river and set a backfire.
Sure.
I got to stick here with the transmitter. You take the walkie-talkie, and I'll let you know what's happening.
Sure, you stay here with the pretty girl. We go and get fried.
Shut up, Bat.
Hey, Hanson, you'll have to go with them. Three's not enough.
Sure.
Well, the cop's going to do some work for a change.
You better take along some food and a thermos. Come on, step on it.
Too bad we haven't got the crack.
A couple of sandwiches I made up. Here.
Thank you.
This sure is something, isn't it?
Yeah.
You scared?
Scared? Why?
Your face is white. You scared?
I'm from the city.
I know what you mean. Those trees give me the willies, too. It's dark.
Sure. That's it.
You'll be all right.
Listen, kid. If anything happens, you take my car. Here are the keys.
What do you mean?
If I don't come back, keep the car.
You kidding? You're coming back.
Yeah, sure. So long.
Hey, my name's Jan. What's yours?
Wally.
You be careful, Wally.
We went into the forest, men with spades, men against fire and terror. There was the man they called Fat, 300 pounds of ungainly body, topped by a tiny and almost disgustingly childlike face. There was Crowbar, a big, dark man, quiet and filled with a knowledge of the woods. Hansen, the state trooper, thin and wiry, his natty khaki shirt stained with sweat and dirt. And me. We'd gone about a mile when we first heard it. It came in gusts with the wind high above us.
Wait a minute.
Holy...
Shut up.
Let's get out of here.
About 3 miles away, I figure, coming fast.
We're about that far from the river, aren't we?
Yeah.
Listen, you guys, if it's crossed the river, we're sunk. Let's get out.
Hey, Wally.
Yeah?
Get the ranger. Tell him it's coming this way pretty fast.
All right.
Look, sparks up there, see?
Sure, Fat. Sparks, fire. You
Hello.
Chicken?
Oh, Leo.
Hello. Pendel calling Roe. Pendel calling Roe. Over.
Roe. This is Roe. Over.
We're still about 3 miles from the river. We can hear it. Over.
You can't set a backfire now. Wind's changed. You better come back. Over.
Right. Well, he says go back.
That's okay with me, boy.
Come on.
Gee, listen to that.
I wanted to run again. That same feeling I'd known before. The fear all around us closing in and down. There was no sky above, only blackness tinged with red, pressing. And behind, the living forest running, overtaking, and passing us. When we reached the road again, the sound was steady. I had a strange feeling of relief when I saw the forest ranger and the girl, Jan. It was like coming home. I think it was then that I stopped being afraid.
Come on, Ro, we can't do no good now.
Yeah, you're not kidding. We gotta try and join up with the others.
What do you mean?
Well, the fire's on three sides of us. That means we head southeast.
Well, can't we take the road back?
Nope. There's 200 men trying to keep a path open for us. We gotta make 5 miles in a hurry.
Bad as that.
Yeah, worse. If we don't get there in time and they can't make a fire break, we're gonna be smack in the middle and there's not going to be any way out.
Our country faces a critical problem, excessive hoarding and purchasing by thoughtless people. Panic buying is senseless buying. It helps no one and creates situations which are as dangerous as they are unnecessary. The American Grocery Manufacturers Association reports that we have a surplus of 450 million bushels of grain. Stocks of lard are 189 million pounds above what we had last year. Production of vegetable oils is above the average of the last 10 years. Quantities of fresh and canned vegetables are 10% above normal. Supplies of sugar are 950,000 tons above last year's figure. There's a surplus of eggs growing at the rate of 15 million dozen every month. The only shortages are temporary local shortages, so don't help to create them. The good citizen is the thoughtful consumer. Buy what you need, don't deny yourself the things to which you're accustomed, but don't take somebody else's share. You'll buy what you need if you need what you buy. The size of your shopping bag is the test of your allegiance to your country.
Now we return you to Escape.
We didn't carry anything but canteens. It was hot, and because it was hot, it made you thirsty even when you didn't need water. The going was rough, and we could only head in what we thought was the general direction of safety. It was at the ridge that we lost the first man.
Wind's changing again, Crowbar.
Which way?
I can't tell. It's haywire with this fire.
Do we go straight ahead?
Might as well.
Oh, wait a minute. See that ridge?
Yeah?
Why don't I get up there? Shouldn't take more than 10 minutes, and I'll be able to get a better look. Give me the flash, and I'll signal to you.
I don't know. We haven't got much of a start. Fire's behind us and a lot faster.
Well, it's better than walking toward it. Remember, it's on three sides.
Okay. You make it fast, Crowbar.
Sure.
Good luck.
Thanks.
What do we do? Just sit and wait?
Yeah, that's right.
Listen, you're the ranger. Why don't you go? What'd you send Crowbar for?
He's fought fires before, and he knows. He's a better man to climb up there. He's faster than me.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Hey, kid. Kid, are you okay?
Sure, Wally. Just fine. Guess I'm not used to walking, though. These high heels don't help.
Yeah. Take it easy, huh?
My feet feel like they did once at a dance I went to. Some big lunk climbed all over me.
Guess you won't have a job in Missoula, huh?
If I get out of this, that's all I care about.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm scared. Give me a hand, will you?
She held onto my hand tight. It wasn't the darkness that frightened her now. There wasn't darkness anymore, but a yellowish red light that came from everywhere. It was another kind of fear. Fear of something you could see, hear, and with every minute feel more and more. Well, we waited there 10 minutes, 11, 12, and then...
Did you hear something?
Yeah.
It seemed to come from over there.
From the ridge, maybe?
Maybe.
Listen, you think something got Crowbar? A lion or something?
I'll go up.
No, Pendel.
What do you mean, no?
No time. We waited too long now.
Oh, but he may be hurt.
Yeah, I know that. It'll take you longer than it took Crowbar to get there. Now, come on.
Nuts.
You couldn't find him in the dark? Who says he's hurt anyway? We'll move on and he'll catch up.
I say we go after him.
Not me.
I'll put it to a vote, but hurry up now. Hanson.
We go on.
All right, Fat.
Let's get out of here.
And I say go on. That leaves you messing.
I'm staying with Wally.
All right. I'll go with you. We never saw Crowbar again. Maybe a lion got him. Maybe he got lost. We never saw him again. The ranger went ahead, finding trails somehow, keeping us moving. We began to climb, and after a while we were on another ridge. For the first time we could see the fire. It stretched out for miles like a huge red sea. It was all around us.
Oh, gee, Wally.
Yeah, I know, Kim. I know.
Will it hurt much?
I don't know.
All right, take a breather. I'm going to try the walkie-talkie again.
He's not scared, is he?
I guess not.
Is that because he's a ranger? Or because he's very brave?
You're a funny girl.
No, I'm not. Hey, give me a kiss, will you?
Sure. Why did you want me to do that?
I don't know. You're a nice fella. I miss you.
Listen, Jana. I want to tell you something.
What?
If we get out, maybe...
Yeah?
Look, I'm all right. I mean, we could have fun together.
I know.
I did something wrong once. I killed a man.
Why?
He framed me. Got me pulled away for something I didn't do. We were driving in the east and ran over a woman. He was at the wheel, but he took a powder and left me.
But you didn't do it.
That's what I say, but I'd been drinking and went to sleep. When I woke up, I was behind the wheel. He'd put me there. That's how the cops found me. I got 5 years.
Oh.
I was married. My wife killed herself. Ashamed, I guess. I lost my job and my friends. I swore I'd get my pal, and I did. He was a louse. He knew I was after him and ran, but I caught up with him.
I don't care.
Don't you? I don't know why I told you that. Maybe because if we do get out, you...
Sure. I know. It's okay.
Come on, Pendel. The ranger's moving off.
It was the state trooper, Hanson. I wondered how much he'd heard, but there wasn't any time to worry then. Roe thought he'd seen a break in the fire, and we headed for it. When we got down on the trees again, I began to get a feeling that I'd been there before. It was nothing I could recognize, just a feeling. And then a couple of 100 yards that long, I knew why.
Hey, hold up! There's a shack!
Looks like someone's living there. Better have a look.
Door's open.
Hey.
It's a man.
All right, give me a hand.
Sure.
Hey, he's being shot.
Yeah. A few hours ago, from the looks of it.
You think the man who did this might have started it?
What do you mean?
A fire. It started a few miles north of here. We figured somebody got careless with a match. Maybe the killer running away.
I'd like to get the fella that did that. Maybe I will.
Yeah, me too. Well, we can't do anything here. Come on.
From there on, nobody talked. It was hard enough to lift your feet. Jan was nearly through, and I half carried her. If Roe knew where he was leading us, he didn't say. We followed and knew that sooner or later we'd stop because we were too tired to go on. Fat was the first.
Listen, fellas. Wait a minute.
Oh, you gotta go on. There's still a chance.
No, rest. Just for a minute.
No, get up.
Please, 1 minute, that's all.
Get up.
No, I can't. I can't.
Okay, you stay.
No.
Well, then, come on.
But I tell you, I can't.
I'm sorry. You catch up to us and stay on the trail.
No.
All right, come on, Chad.
We're going to leave him?
No, we have to.
No, please don't leave me. I'm coming. Fellas, please,
listen, wait! Can we help him?
Oh, we're almost dead ourselves.
Fellas,
I don't know whether it was because none of us liked him or because we knew that we couldn't do anything. It's funny how you can lose a man and know he's going to die and put him right out of your mind. Perhaps we wanted to live so badly, we figured the fire would take time out from us to attend to him. Hanson was next.
I'm finished.
No, you're not. Just a bit more to go. We can still get through.
No, you go ahead. Save the girl.
I'm sorry.
Go on. Maybe I can catch up. I gotta rest. You, Wally, do me a favor.
What?
I lost my gun somewhere. You know what I mean? It'll be quicker that way. You got one?
Yeah. Here.
Thanks. One bullet fired, huh? That's all I wanted to know. Okay, Pindell. I've had enough rest. I can keep up with you now. Feel a little safer with this on me. Go ahead.
So he knew. I didn't care now. I was too tired to care. If he wanted to play cop, that was his business. Sure, the man in the shack was Lenny Gillen. Sure, I'd kill him. It was my match on that last cigarette when I was lost that must have started this fire, but it wasn't important anymore. Right now, I wanted to get Jan out of it. Get myself out.
What was that?
It's behind us. It sounded like Hanson.
All right. Come on. Watch the ravine.
No, he must have fallen.
We gotta help him.
No time.
Got you.
We didn't help Fat. Why him?
I don't know. Please.
All right, stay here. Hanson! Hanson!
Oh, here!
Keep calling, Hanson!
Here! Over this way! This way! Over here!
Okay.
My leg!
Can you get up?
Oh, my leg. Broken, I guess.
You know about me, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Girl knows, too. I heard you telling her.
She won't say anything?
No, I guess not.
Gillen had it coming to him.
I wouldn't know. I'm a cop.
Yeah.
It's getting hot.
Put your arm over my shoulder.
You can't get me up there.
Well, I can try. Now, come on. Come on.
Hey. No, it's no good. We can't make it.
I'll get the ranger and come back.
No time. Go on.
No, I...
Get out of here.
No, I can't.
Go on. I've got your gun. Nobody will ever know. You can get away with murder.
Hanson, I'm sorry. Go on, get out of here!
Somehow I made it up the trail again. I thought I heard a shot. Maybe it was a burning tree going down. Jan was waiting for me, and we went on until the trees began to thin out, and we heard the shots of men. I don't remember anything else because I passed out for a long time. When I woke up, Jan was sitting by my bed, and it was cool again.
Hi.
Oh, hi, Jan. Did they get Hansen out?
No.
Jan? Listen to me. About what I told you back there. You know, the man I killed.
Yeah.
I'm not sorry. I mean, it was all right about him, but not Hansen, Crowbar, and Fat. That was my fault, you know that.
Yeah.
Well, I want you to call a cop. Listen, kid, I've been dreaming about it. It's no good now. Be a good kid and call a cop, will you?
I don't have to. There's one outside now.
What do you mean?
When you passed out, I guess you were delirious or something. You told them.
I told them? Oh, that's good. That's good. Oh, I'm glad.
You want me to hang around?
Well, that's up to you, I guess.
I guess it is. I'll hang around.
Each year, thousands of Southern Californians contribute to the pension and sick and injured funds of the Sheriff's Relief Association. You can do your share for this deserving organization by attending the Sheriff's annual rodeo in the Los Angeles Coliseum on August 27th. Cowboy star Roy Rogers and Trigger will head the great array of talent on this thrill-packed show. June Haver has been selected as rodeo queen, and Joel McRae will act as grand marshal. There'll be exhibitions of roping and riding by champions from all over the country and 1,000 other exciting events at the Sheriff's Annual Rodeo, the greatest spectacle of its kind in the world. It's at the Los Angeles Coliseum, 2:30 Sunday afternoon, August 27th. It's a treat the whole family will enjoy. And don't forget the date, Sunday, August 27th.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight has presented The Red Forest by Anthony Ellis. Featured in tonight's cast were Georgia Ellis as Jan, Bill Conrad as Wally, Paul Fries as Hanson, Ben Wright as Roe, Jay Novello as Fat, and Will Gear as Crowbar. Special music arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Next week.
You're in the middle of the most barren desert of Mexico, watching a wealthy Oriental voluntarily being strangled to death by the priests of his strange religion, dangerous fanatic priests from whom there is, for you also, no escape.
Next week at this time, CBS invites you to escape with an exciting story of a man trapped by the priests of a weird cult in the desert wastes of Mexico, as Gouverneur Morris tells it in The Footprint. Be listening. Goodbye then until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. For radio entertainment at its best, Keep tuned to your CBS station. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
We have a minute before our next show, so let's drop in on Fibber McGee and Molly with an episode of Stardust Time.
Stardust Time with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Hey, Molly, the advertising firm of McGee, McBurney, McDonald, McGillicuddy, and McGee has just signed up its first account.
Oh, McGee, really?
I'm not giving to telling falsehoods, kiddo. I am now handling the entire advertising program of the Oak Street Pool Hall.
You mean that dump where you play pool is going to advertise?
Molly, the Oak Street Pool Hall is not a dump. Of course, I admit I don't gain too much prestige in the advertising business by getting their account, but fellas got to start someplace.
Would it be out of order for me to ask how much you're going to get paid?
Molly, if you knew anything about the advertising business, you wouldn't ask a question like that. The agency always gets a 15% commission.
Oh, yes, I believe I had heard that.
Sure. So from now on, I get to play pool 15% of the time without paying for it.
You mean they're not paying you any money?
Well, not to begin with, anyway.
Well, we can at least be thankful that your first account isn't a dog kennel. They'd no doubt be paying you off in kibble.
Actually, I'll be making big dough out of the Oak Street Pool Hall account in no time at all. My advertising campaign is going to bring in so much new business that my client will soon have a whole chain of pool halls.
He will?
Oh, sure. Wouldn't surprise me if the Oak Street Pool Hall got to be like Howard Johnson's with a pool hall every 20 miles along the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
Well, do you have any specific ideas how you plan to make the Oak Street Pool Hall one of the titans of American industry?
Yes, I do. I've already got our first newspaper ad all laid out here. Look at this. I'm going to have a picture of Audie Eckerly up at the top, you see. And then underneath it, I'm going to say, Mr. Audie Eckerly, noted sportsman about town, wouldn't even soil his hands by picking up a cue any place except at the Oak Street Pool Hall. Why not join Mr. Eckerly and other prominent citizens in a round of snooker or balk line at this popular recreation spot today?
How many free games does Audie Eckerly get for giving this lavish endorsement?
Well, we've been dickering over that a little, and he finally settled for a free box of chalk for his cue.
Well, I certainly hope the ad brings the results you're hoping for, sweetheart.
Oh, it can't miss. People from all over town will be flocking into the Oak Street Pool Hall. It'll be jammed day and night. I can just see it now. Why, it'll be so... Dad rat it all anyway.
What's the matter?
I just thought of something. Why, when this ad comes out, the Oak Street Pool Hall will be so crowded, I'll never get a chance to play.
Fibber McGee and Molly, our guests on NBC Stardust.
We have reached the science fiction part of our podcast for this week with an episode of X-1. This time, it's Time and Time Again from 1956.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, when you hear the hearty laugh and familiar voice of the great Gildersleeve tomorrow night, you know you're in for some hilarious adventures. Because whenever Gildy is around, somehow things never seem to go as planned. It might be his impulsive nature, or maybe it's his incurable weakness for the fairest sex, but whatever it is, the great Gildersleeve is bound to keep you laughing for a full 25 minutes. Tune in tomorrow night and meet Judge Hooker, Nephew Leroy, Housekeeper Bertie, and all the rest of the friendly people from Summerfield as they join the great Gildersleeve. Now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X-1.
To Tonight's story, Time and Time Again by H. Beam Piper. It happened during a routine skirmish in the Great War. Patrols advanced from the defense perimeter under jet cover and preceded by napalm throwers. The enemy defended in depth and mopped up with guided 98s fired from 40 miles to the rear. The blast area was 10 miles in circumference, and the medics didn't find much to pick up over 500 yards in.
Come on. All right, now back it in here. Look out, it's lousy with mud. More. Now, cut left. More, hold it. Stretches.
Come on, Travers, get those men out.
Yes, sir. Get a move on. Line them up. Come on. Easy. You want to kill them. Okay, take it away.
They might have left those Joes where they was. Half of them won't last till the plane comes.
As long as they're alive, they'll be treated. Get those tags out, Travers. Start taking names.
Yes, sir. This one must have been 1,000 yards in.
Get his dog tag out.
What a mess. Here. Hartley Allen, Captain G5 Camry, search AN-73D. Number SO-23869-403-J.
Hartley?
Allen Hartley.
Oh. That must be the Hartley that wrote Children of the Mist and Conker's Road.
Never heard of him. Major, I think maybe he's partly conscious. Had I better give him another shot?
Go ahead, Sergeant. There isn't much else we can do for him. It's a rotten shame.
Yeah, ain't it always? Okay, Captain, let me have that arm. There.
Oh, God. Tom.
Get up, Alan. Can't stay in bed all day.
I remember that. Clear as if it were real.
Up and at him. Hit the deck.
Remarkably vivid. It's strange.
Alan, are you all right?
I'm all right. What's wrong with my voice? It's too high.
What are you doing, practicing singing?
My voice has changed.
Is that all? You're growing up. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday?
Hey, wake up, son. Wake up.
I am awake. It's impossible. I am awake.
Well, the way you slept through that alarm, I'd say it was impossible. Come on, out of bed.
I don't understand.
You went to bed at a decent hour. You could wake up the next morning. Come on, son. Breakfast waiting. Out of bed or I'll turn it over.
All right. It's a dream.
Maybe, but you're wide awake now.
I am. I'm awake.
Well, half awake anyway.
That's the bell at St. Boniface, isn't it? What day is it?
Are you kidding? You forget today's your birthday?
No, I didn't forget.
Neither did I. Here, son. Happy 13th birthday. You won't guess what's in here.
A rifle. A light 22 rifle.
Oh, now, how did you know that?
I remembered.
Did I spill the beans sometime? Oh, I could have sworn it would be a surprise. Well, go on. Open it. You like it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's perfect, Dad.
We'll have to lay down rules about using it. And I'll have to teach you how to operate it. I don't believe in letting a boy handle a gun until he really knows how. If I let you play with that thing before I teach you about guns, you'd blow your head off.
I suppose so.
I'll be shaving, Alan. Come down to breakfast when you're ready. Well, it's a big day today. You're almost a man.
Almost.
You're still groggy. Snap out of it, Alan.
I will. There's a dream in it somewhere, but I'm not sure which.
What?
Never mind, Dad. I'll be right down for breakfast.
What you gonna do today, son?
Well, I want to do some reading this morning, I guess.
That's always a good thing to do. After breakfast, suppose you take a walk down to the station and get me a Times.
Didn't it come?
What, the Times? Well, they don't deliver. Be a good idea, though. Maybe I'll talk to Sam Ashburn about it. Here's a half dollar, Alan. Get anything you want for yourself out of the change.
Thanks, Dad.
Finish your milk before you go.
Sure, Dad. Thanks for the money.
You're big enough to handle it now. Hurry back. I'd like to finish the crossword puzzle before lunch.
Here you are, Alan. One times. Tell your father the puzzle's a stinker this week.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Ashburn.
Look out for the trucks when you cross the highway.
I'll go across Elton's lot. It's a shortcut.
Elton's? You'll have a hard time crossing there, son. There's four buildings on that block.
I thought they burned down.
Well, I've seen them this morning, big as life.
I guess that didn't happen yet.
What'd you say?
Nothing, Mr. Ashburn. I was just muttering.
My days, youngsters talked up.
Yes, sir. Bye, Mr. Ashburn. Monday, August 6th, 1945. Okinawa 1, bombing Japan.
Hey, Alan. Huh? Alan, wait up.
Hey, Larry Morton. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Al. You going to Sunday school?
No, I have some things I want to do at home.
Oh, get him. Fancy pants talk. Things I want to do at home.
Oh, go chase yourself around the block.
Go jump in a garbage can.
Go take a flying jet to the moon.
Hey, that's a new one. Flying jet to the moon. You thought up a new one, Al.
Yeah.
I wish I could stay home from Sunday school when I wanted to. How about us going swimming at the canoe club after?
Oh, I wish I could. I gotta stay home. We're expecting company. A couple aunts of mine. Dad wants me to stay home when they come.
Aunts are a pain.
Nothing I can do.
You see the football movie at the Grand? Boy, what a team. Notre Dame.
I thought you'd like Cornell.
Cornell? Huh. They couldn't beat Vassar.
Well, you're gonna go to Cornell, aren't you?
Me, Cornell? Fat chance.
I'll bet you do.
I wouldn't take your money.
Well, I know you wouldn't, but you'll go to Cornell, all right.
Ha, Cornell. Far above Cayuga's waters, there's an awful smell.
Just the same, you'll go to Cornell. Larry, I gotta go.
Well, so long, Al. I'll see you.
So long, Larry. See you.
I'm stuck in this corner. Seven-letter word, a mixing proportion.
Titrate.
Huh? Titrate. T-I. It fits. Now how did you know that, Alan?
That? Well, I read it somewhere, I guess.
Oh. What you reading now? Tarzan again?
No, not Tarzan.
It's refreshing to see you with a book. Sometimes I think I ought to forbid comic books in the house. Yeah, they must be raising the devil with those bombing raids in Japan.
How long do you think the war in Japan will last, Dad?
Oh? I'd say to the middle of 1946. They'll have to invade those islands foot by foot.
I don't think so, Dad. I wouldn't be surprised if the war was over very suddenly.
How? By magic? There isn't a thing on earth will make those Japanese surrender. You expect somebody to make a pass and it'll be all over by this afternoon?
Something like that.
Wish it could. Be a lot of boys dead in the invasion of Japan.
Mr. Hartley, excuse me, please.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gutchell.
That's Frank Gutchell, Dad?
That's right.
Excuse me. I didn't mean to disturb you, Mr. Hartley.
It's all right. Lovely day, isn't it, Mr. Gutchell?
Mr. Hartley, the Lord's Day is always beautiful.
Of course, Mr. Gutchell.
Mr. Hartley, I wonder if you could lend me a gun and some bullets. My little dog's been hurt, and it's been suffering something terrible.
Oh, that's too bad.
I want a gun to put the poor thing out of its pain.
Of course. How would a 20-gauge shotgun do? You wouldn't want anything heavy.
I was hoping you'd let me have a little gun. Maybe, so big.
A pistol?
So I could put it in my pocket. It wouldn't look right to carry a hunting gun on the Lord's Day. And people wouldn't understand that it was for a work of mercy.
Of course, I understand. You're a very religious man.
The whole world is evil, Mr. Hartley.
Yeah, sometimes it certainly looks like it. Well, I have a Colt 38 special from the auxiliary police outfit.
Well, that's fine.
Now, you've got to bring it right back, Mr. Gutchell. I might be called out. Now, you'll have to promise to get it right back.
Dad, wait a minute. I just remembered.
Remembered what?
Well, aren't there some cartridges left for the Luger? Then you wouldn't be without the Colt.
That's right. I have got a German automatic I could let you have. That way I wouldn't get stuck. You'd have to return it promptly, though.
Oh, wait, Dad. I'll get it. I know where the cartridges
be
are.
Be careful, son. Well, Mr. Gutchell, it sure turned out nice after all that.
Hello, police headquarters. This is Blake Hartley. Frank Gutchell, who lives on Campbell Street, has just borrowed a gun from me, ostensibly to shoot a dog. What? No, he has no dog. He intends shooting his wife. Now, listen, he'll walk home. If you hurry, you can get a man there on time. What? No, but I wish you'd get my pistol back to me. It's from the First World War. All right, then you'll take care of it. Goodbye.
There you are. What kept you, Alan?
Well, I couldn't find the cartridges at first. I'll show Mr. Gutchell how it works. It's all loaded, ready to shoot. This is the safety. Just push it forward and up. There are 8 shots in it.
Did you load the chamber, Alan?
Sure. It's on safe now. You understand how it works, Mr. Gutchell?
Oh, yes. Yes, I understand. Thank you, Mr. Hartley. Thank you, Sonny. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gutchell. Return the gun when you're done.
Yes, I'll be done with it soon. Goodbye.
Alan. You shouldn't have loaded that gun.
I guess it's all over now. I had to keep you from fooling with it. I didn't want you to see I took out the firing pin.
You what?
Gutchell didn't want that gun to shoot a dog. He's a fanatic. He sees visions, hears voices. The voices probably put him up to this. Well, I'll submit that any man who holds intimate conversations with disembodied spirits isn't to be trusted with a gun.
What are you talking about?
While I was at it, I called the police upstairs. I put a handkerchief over my mouth and told them I was you.
You? Well, why did you have to do that?
I couldn't have told them this is little Alan Hartley, 13 years old.
And suppose he really wants to shoot a dog. What kind of a mess will I be in then?
No mess. If I'm wrong, which I'm not, I'll take the rap for it. Dumb kid trick, you know. But if I'm right, you'll have to front for me. You give me a lot of cheap boy hero publicity, which I don't want.
This is crazy, Alan. This is absolutely crazy.
Maybe. We'll have the complete returns in 20 minutes.
Mr. Hartley?
Mr. Blake Hartley?
That's right.
I'm Detective Sergeant Kaborski from Homicide. Here's your Luger.
Thank you.
I don't know how you spotted that guy, but when we busted in, he was pointing that gun at his wife and swearing a blue streak because it wouldn't go off.
I'm glad I was able to help.
You know, they may even have some kind of a citation for you, Mr. Hartley.
I don't think that's necessary.
In the department, we figure a little publicity never hurt nobody. Even a lawyer, huh?
I really would prefer it if it were kept quiet.
Well, whatever you say. We'll want you to drop around in the morning for a statement.
I'll be glad to.
Well, goodbye. Goodbye, Sonny.
Goodbye, Sergeant.
Sergeant. Why don't you take the citation, Dad?
Well, you were right. You saved that woman's life. Now, let's see you put back the firing pin.
Sure. Here.
All right, Alan. Suppose we have a little talk.
But I explained everything.
You did not. Yesterday, you wouldn't even have known how to take this pistol apart. Today, you've been using language and expressing ideas that are outside of everything you've ever known before. Now, I want to know...
I hope you're not toying with the medieval notion of obsession.
What?
Well, you say I'm changed. When did you first notice this?
Last night, you were still my little boy. This morning, I don't know. You've been strange all day. There's been something... Alan, what's happened to you?
I wish I could be sure myself, Dad. You see, when I woke this morning, I hadn't the least recollection of anything I'd done yesterday, August 4th, 1945.
Oh, but that's serious.
You don't know how serious. My last memory was lying on a stretcher, injured by a bomb explosion. I was 43 years old, and the year was 1975.
1975? Well, that's right. You'll be 43 in 1975, but a bomb?
Yes, during the siege of Buffalo in the Third World War. I was a captain in G5, Scientific Warfare, General Staff.
Buffalo? You mean Buffalo, New York?
There'd been a transpolar invasion of Canada. I was sent to the front to check on service failures of a new lubricating oil. A week after I got there, Ottawa fell and the retreat started. We made a stand at Buffalo, and that was where I got it. I remember being picked up and getting a narcotic injection. The next thing I knew, I was in bed upstairs, and it was 1945 again. And I was back in my own 13-year-old body.
Oh, Alan, you just had a nightmare to end all nightmares, that's all.
I thought it might be that at first, but I rejected it. It won't fit the facts.
But it's ridiculous, all this Battle of Buffalo stuff. You picked up something listening to the radio. All the commentators have been going on about another war after this one. You've just got an undigested hunk of H.V. Calhoun born in your subconscious, that's
all. But that isn't everything. I remember 4 years of high school, 4 years at Cornell, 7 years as a reporter on the Philadelphia Record, 3 novels, Children of the Mist, Rose of Death, Conqueror's Road. You think a 13-year-old can dream up all that stuff?
But it's the only possible explanation.
Maybe, but I can speak 5 languages today that I couldn't yesterday. French, German, Chinese, Russian, and a little Spanish. Although I've got a Mexican accent you could cut with a knife.
But how did it happen? Alan, I can't believe it.
All I know is here I am. I've been reading up on time theories. Nobody seems to know much about them. Evidently, time exists parallel as another dimension, and I got kicked backwards along it.
But how?
Oh, it may have been the radiations from the bomb or the narcotic injection, or both together. But the fact remains, I'm here with full knowledge of my future identity.
This is quite a shock, Alan.
But you do believe me, don't you?
Yes, I suppose I must. You seem so strange, as if you weren't my son.
I'm your son, all right. Same body as yesterday. I've just had an educational shortcut.
Wait a minute. If you can remember the next 30 years... Suppose you tell me when the war is going to end. This one against the Japs, I mean.
Oh, sure. Well, the Japanese surrender will be announced at exactly 7:01 p.m. on August 14th. That's a week from Tuesday.
Week from Tuesday.
You better make sure we have plenty of grub in the house by then. Everything will be closed up tight till Thursday morning, even the restaurants. I remember we had nothing to eat in the house but some scraps.
A week from Tuesday. And that's pretty sudden, isn't it?
Not after today.
What do you mean? What happened today?
Oh, plenty. What time is it, Dad?
That's 11:16.
Is your watch right?
Well, to the seconds, why?
Well, it'll come at exactly 11:17:40.
What'll come?
The radio announcement.
What are you getting at? Something important on the radio? Well, we'll see.
Well, don't bother, Dad. It won't work. I remember we had a tube burned out.
Well, there is something wrong. When is this announcement of yours?
Oh, now I remember it. I memorized it in journalism school in 1954. What time is it?
11:18 o'clock.
We're breaking into the program now. President Truman has just announced that an atomic bomb has been dropped on the Japanese industrial city of Hiroshima. The bomb was dropped 16 hours ago, and the announcement was delayed to ascertain the results of the explosion. A man named John Howard Peterson read that announcement from the Washington newsroom with NBC.
I don't believe it.
No? Well, listen.
What?
That's the Burke Platt factory whistle. And the bells of St. Boniface. Now, next, the whistle at the volunteer firehouse.
Well, then it's true. It's true.
Sure. Then Larry Morton came by on his bicycle.
Hey, Al. Al, you here? You hear about the bomb? An atomic bomb.
Yeah, we heard.
Boy, atomic bomb. Oh, boy. I gotta go find my pop. He's on the golf course. Bye, Al. Bye, Mr. Hartley.
You knew. You knew about it.
The next bomb hits Nagasaki.
I thought that stuff about atomic energy was so much fantasy. Was that the kind of bomb that got you?
Oh, that was a firecracker to the one that got me. It was a guided 98, exploded 10 miles away.
And that's going to happen in 30 years?
I remember it.
How about... how about me? Oh, wait. Never mind. I don't think I'd better know when I'm going to die.
I couldn't tell you anyway. I had a letter from you just before I left for the front. You were 78 then, and you were still hunting and fishing and flying your own plane.
But another war, and fought on American soil. Oh, Alan, I wish this hadn't happened to you.
It happened. I remember it. But if I can help it, I'm not going to get killed in any Battle of Buffalo.
But if you remember it, if time exists as a parallel dimension, then every tick, we're getting closer to that Third World War.
Dad, you know what I remembered when Gutchell came to borrow that gun?
No, I suppose that you suspected him and warned me.
No, that wasn't it. The other time, the first time, when I was really 13, I wasn't home. I'd been swimming at the canoe club with Larry Morton. When I get home about a half an hour from now, I found the house full of cops.
But if the gun didn't fire...
What makes you think it didn't? Gutchell talked the 38 out of you. He went home, shot his wife four times in the body, once behind the ear, and used the sixth shot to blow his own brains out.
That's what you remember?
Yes. The cops traced the gun. They took a very poor view of your lending it to him. You never got it back.
But here it is.
Oh, not the way I remember it. But I didn't want you in trouble, so I warned you. Dad, I found out the future can be changed.
One man can't change the whole future.
I stopped a murder and a suicide.
I know, but...
With 30 years to work, I can stop a world war. I'll have the means, too.
The means?
Unlimited wealth and influence. I've got a good memory, Dad. I wrote a list out this afternoon.
Salt, jet pilot, citation, ponder, middle ground. What is this, a code?
Horses. That's a list of Kentucky Derby winners from 1946 to 1970.
Huh? You sure?
Oh, I learned that list on a bet at the Officers Club in Cincinnati in 1971. Assault paid 8-1. You figure out what we can take in.
But gambling.
Oh, this isn't gambling. It's a sure thing. When we get rolling, we'll make the Rockefellers look like pikers.
Assault at 8-1.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I could scrape up $5,000. In 10 years, that'll make a lot of money. Any other little thing you have in mind, Ellen?
Well, by 1952, we start building a political organization here in Pennsylvania. In 1960, I think we can elect you president.
President? Isn't that going a little too far?
Well, why not? Who wouldn't vote for a politician who was always right? Besides, that's the one thing we've got to change. In 1960, we had a man in the White House who was good to his wife and sang a nice tenor, and that's about all. He fouled up so completely, we ended up at war. And I think President Hartley might be a little more trusted to take a strong line.
But I don't know anything about international decisions.
I do. I know all the wrong ones. If we can stop one murder, we can stop a war. It's worth a try, isn't it?
I guess so. How do I start?
Well, as I remember, just after the bomb announcement, you got a phone call from the city fusion party about the next election.
Well, there's a lot of talk about a reform ticket.
Well, that call is going to be important, Dad. It's the turning point. Now, you've got to know. There it is.
Well, what do I do?
Well, answer it. Go ahead.
But...
Don't worry. I'll tell you what to do. Go ahead.
Hello? Yes, this is Blake Hartley. Judge Cribbins. Yes. Just a moment. Alan.
Oh.
He's asking me to run.
Oh, my head.
Alan.
Oh.
Alan, what's the matter?
Oh.
Alan! He passed out. Alan, what do I do now? Alan, listen to me. Alan! Alan, what's the matter?
Captain. Captain Hartley. Captain Hartley.
He was all right, Doctor. I gave him a shot and he was all right.
Well, he's dead. All right, Sergeant. Make out the tag. Hartley Allen, Captain. Dead April 8th, 1975.
Allen! Allen, what happened? Allen! Allen! Allen, are you all right?
Hi, Dad.
I've got Judge Crimmins on the phone. What do I tell him?
What?
Alan, are you all right? You passed out.
Sure. I'm all right. Hey, today's my birthday, isn't it? What'd you get for my birthday, huh?
Don't you remember? The Third World War?
What Third World War? Dad, what's the matter? You're looking at me funny.
You don't remember. You're back again, aren't you? Back to 13 years old.
Sure, I'm 13 today, for corn's sake, Dad.
You must have died up there. It was only a mind transfer. That means I'm on my own. I have to do it myself without your help.
Help for what? If it's the grass, I said I'd cut it tomorrow.
No, it's not the grass. I've got to save your life, Ellen.
I can't let you die that way in 1975.
What are you talking about, Dad? You sound goofy.
I've got to change it all by myself.
Change what?
Never mind, Alan. You don't know yet. Come on. Let's have lunch.
Sure, Dad, but how about my present now? What'd you get me for my birthday?
In a minute, son. Go on in.
Okay. Well, hurry up, Dad. Huh?
Sure, all right. Now, where did I put that list of horses?
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Time and Time Again, written by H. Beam Piper and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Jack Grimes, Peter Fernandez, Joe DeSantis, Joseph Bell, Clark Gordon, Herm Dinkin, Dick Hamilton, and James Dukas. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.